Welcome to a WXPR special program on broadband and economic development in the North Woods. This is WXPR News Director Ken Krall, and for the next hour, we're going to examine a technology transformation that has taken place over the last 6 years, during which the expansion and adoption of high-speed internet in the home and workplace has led to new economic opportunities. On our program today, we're going to be talking with Don Sadlowski, the founder of the Northwoods Broadband and Economic Development Coalition, also currently serving as the executive director for Grow North Regional Economic Development Corporation, Dr. George Carling, the superintendent of schools for the Three Lakes School District, and to Tim Brown, UW Extension Community Natural Resources and Economic Development Agent for Oneida County. Broadband, also known as high-speed internet, is a topic we have been closely following here on WXPR for the past several years. Today, the applications for broadband are widely understood by most internet users, while many homes and businesses would not know how to function without it in the year 2014. It's worth remembering that broadband hasn't been around forever. In fact, just as recently as 2001, the term broadband was virtually unknown. In that year, only 3% of American households had a connection to the internet at a speed faster than the then-standard 56K using what's known as a dial-up modem. But after that, things began to change at a dramatic pace. High-speed internet over phone lines, known as DSL, came to the North Woods in 2004 with speeds up to 3.1 megabits per second, which was roughly 50 times faster than that of dial-up. By 2007, speeds had increased up to 10 megabit range over cable and DSL. At the same time, the first high-speed wireless networks featuring so-called 3G service came online in the North Woods, providing a broadband connection for users of smartphones and other mobile devices. Today, many homes and businesses in the North Woods have access to broadband with speeds of 50 megabits, both over hardwired connections as well as over wireless networks that have since been upgraded to 4G technology. In just a dozen short years, thanks to broadband expansion, users have access to speeds roughly 1,000 times faster than dial-up. A movie that now takes about 2 minutes to download would have taken a day and a half at dial-up speeds. Broadband makes it possible to do things today that just a few years ago were unimaginable. I spoke with a key person about how all of this has come about in the North Woods. I'm talking with Don Sadlowski, founder of the North Woods Broadband and Economic Development Coalition, and also currently serving as the executive director of Grow North Regional Economic Development Corporation. Don, good day. How is broadband changing, and how do we do business and live during our daily life here in the North Woods? How is it changing?
Well, Ken, the first thing I want to make perfectly clear is that for those of us in economic development, which includes job creation, retention, and expansion, is that broadband, or high-speed internet as some folks refer to it, was never an end in itself. Broadband always has been and ever shall be the means to the end of expanded economies and better economic opportunities. When we talk about broadband, it shouldn't be as if it's some end product in itself. Broadband is a tool, mind you, a very powerful tool, but not an end in itself. Broadband is an enabling technology that's now making it possible for us to begin any number of projects and initiatives based on that high-speed availability.
But high-speed internet wasn't always as widely available in the North Woods as it is today.
That's a true statement, Ken. It took a few early adopters and visionary communities to lead the way and show that it could be done in remote parts of rural Wisconsin, even as the naysayers warned us that we were up here on our own and only the big cities would ever get the kind of high-speed internet that would make it possible to transform the economy. Here in the North Woods, that community was Three Lakes. It seems so long ago now, but it was only just 2007 that we set this pretty audacious goal to become what we called the anchor for technology in the North Woods, by which we meant ensuring that all of the residents of Three Lakes had access to at least one choice of high-speed internet and to give others multiple choices of broadband service. Now, I'm going to be honest, a lot of people laughed at us at the time, and they said we'd never, ever be able to get universal high-speed coverage over the 100 square miles of a township in remote northern Wisconsin. But we went quietly about our business and set to work, and the first thing we did was to create a map of our own that showed where there was existing coverage for both internet and mobile phone service. We literally drove around in a car with devices and measured signal strength on a one-mile grid. I know it sounds crude, but it turned out to be very effective when we took our map to the provider community and highlighted the areas where we needed to expand the network.
So you're having proactively brought the internet and mobile phone providers into the picture was a part of the solution.
Absolutely. It turned out to be the first of several conventional wisdom paradigms, I guess you would call it, that we flipped on their head. The traditional model was that a broadband internet provider or a cell phone company used advertising to locate potential customers one at a time. Instead, what we did was to bring all the providers together, put them in a room, and then we brought a couple hundred potential customers to them. And while we didn't know it at the time, and we certainly didn't go into this consciously thinking we were going to create some kind of a precedent, it turns out that the work we did became known as the Three Lakes Model. Eventually, it got published as a white paper, and it's been used by other rural communities all around the state ever since.
So Three Lakes turned out to be the role model for how other Northwoods communities could expand their broadband networks in a similar fashion.
That's right, Ken. Before long, I was getting phone calls from Joe Hanrick. At the time, he was the town chairman in Minocqua. Later, Colin Snook, the town chairman in Phelps, saying, we want to do what Three Lakes did. And it sort of started a snowball effect that's been rolling downhill ever since. The initial goal was to create what I like to call points of light here in the Northwoods. And by that, I mean communities like Three Lakes and Rhinelander, Eagle River, Minocqua, Phelps, and others where we had some population density. Use the models and share the learned knowledge there first. And then the next step is to connect the dots. In other words, to fill in the empty spaces between those points of light. And that's precisely what we're doing right now with the technology committee that was created in August of 2013 by a resolution of the Oneida County Board of Supervisors. The county charged the committee with finding ways to bring broadband service to those places in between two points of light, for example, in the McNaughton and Harshaw area between Minocqua and Rhinelander. Now many towns have their own technology committees, and there's initiatives like the Lac de Flambeau Band of the Lake Superior Chippewa. They're looking at the possibility of becoming their own internet service provider, and they're teaming up with Vilas County to do it. So what we started back in Three Lakes has become an inspiration and a motivation for towns and villages, cities and counties all over the Northwoods. What we said to them is, look, if Three Lakes can do it, so can you. And a lot of them obviously bought into that because just look at the results that they've accomplished.
I want to get back to broadband as an enabling technology for economic development. What kinds of projects and initiatives were you talking about that can be put in place using this model?
Well, let's talk about two specific examples. The first is second homeowners. It turns out we have nearly 11,000 second homes here in Oneida County. Earlier than 10 years ago, when folks came up to the Northwoods to stay at their vacation home, they left work behind them. They came up here for peace and quiet. 10 years ago, almost no one telecommuted to their job, and very few were required to do work on their own time from home after hours. Well, I don't have to tell you that over the past decade, the nature of the workplace has changed dramatically. Today, tell me someone who doesn't come home from a hard day at the office, and once summer's over and the kids have gotten help with their homework, mom and dad have to log into the office and do some homework of their own. Today, upwards of 25% of Americans now either telecommute or run their business from a home office. So let's talk about all those second homes again. How many of those are the vacation home of a business owner or a highly paid executive? Probably a lot of them. But even if they're the second home of the everyday worker, these folks all have something in common. In the year 2014, they literally can't afford to spend much time in the North Woods unless they have a really good high-speed internet connection in their second home, which enables them to stay connected to their business or job. Now, those of us working in economic development have suspected for a long time that there was a major impact on the local economy from second homeowners who came here and spent incremental dollars while they're in town, but we had no hard data on that. So in early 2013, my broadband coalition teamed up with the UW Extension Center for Community Technology Solutions down in Madison, and we hired the Fiscal and Economic Research Center at UW-Whitewater to do a study that would provide the dollar impact to the local economy of second homeowners. And here's the thing, if they had access to really good broadband internet, and if so, then how much more time each year might they spend here? Turns out the numbers are staggering. With the ability to log into work or even spend the entire summer now here in the North Woods working from that second home, the FERC study revealed that the annual economic impact in Oneida County was nearly $6 million per year. And that's not just this year, that's every year. $6 million simply because the average second homeowner would stay 37 more days if they had broadband internet connectivity. And that's the average. Some of the respondents stated they would stay up to 3 months longer, basically the whole summer, because having the high-speed internet made that possible. Now, if a business announced it was coming to Rhinelander and creating 100 new jobs that would have a $6 million annual impact in the local economy, it would be front-page news. The thing is, to recruit a new business to come to town and bring all those jobs is a major endeavor that can take years to accomplish. And yet right here, under our very noses, we already have 11,000 second homes. We don't have to convince the owners of these homes to come here. They already do that. What we have to do is to recognize that if we use broadband as an enabling technology and make it available to as many of those second homes as we're able, we'll make it possible for people to spend more time here, and that local dollar impact for doing so is huge. So that was the first example, second homes. We've been referring to that as the low-hanging fruit solution because, of course, the second homes were already here and all we had to do was get them hooked into the high-speed grid. The harder task is to create an entirely new economic environment on a much larger scale that's compelling enough to catch people's attention and attract them from outside the area to relocate here.
And that, I take it, brings you to your second example.
Correct. There are two major challenges we've always faced here in the Northwoods, Ken, in terms of recruiting both light and heavy manufacturing. The first, it's our lack of access to interstate highways and heavy rail. And the second is the fact that our winters last from 4 to 6 months, just like this year, you know, during which time getting the raw materials in and the finished goods out can be a logistical nightmare. But what if a technology came along that would fundamentally transform how we manufacture products, not just in America, but in the world? What if instead of requiring a multi-million-dollar, 50,000-square-foot factory to be built before the first worker could even be hired, that instead this new technology might allow 50,000 workers in groups of five or fewer to have 1,000 separate small businesses located in workshops and pole buildings or rented spaces and incubators? Well, that new technology's here. It's actually a technological process more than an individual technology, and it's called FabLab. That's F-A-B. LAB, Fab Lab, which is shorthand for Fabrication Laboratory. Now, I'm sure when most folks hear this term for the first time, they think, what's so new about fabrication? We've had that around forever, but it isn't that kind of shop. A Fab Lab is a holistic approach to engineering, design, project management, cost accounting, and manufacturing all rolled into one, and it's really based on entirely new processes and equipment, including something that most folks might never have heard about before, the 3D printer. We'll talk more about 3D printing in a bit. Fab Labs were invented by the MIT Center for Bits and Atoms in 2001 as a teaching environment for schools from the K-12 right through to the college level. For the past dozen years, they've been slowly expanding around the world. The main obstacle for most of those first 12 years to putting a Fab Lab in place was cost and the availability of the technology. But in just the past couple of years, the cost of the primary tool, the 3D printer, has dropped dramatically, which makes Fab Lab a reality for any school that's truly committed to having one. In order to put a Fab Lab in place and have it be chartered by MIT, the school district must already be teaching STEM curriculum. That's science, technology, engineering, and math. Or at least they have to be committed to adding STEM to their existing curriculum. And one more thing. No, and very important point, no broadband, no Fab Lab. And that's because the file sizes needed to do 3D printing are so enormous that without very high-speed internet, it's literally impossible to function. So right about now, your listeners are thinking, just how is a Fab Lab and the tools in it going to be used to fundamentally change forever the way that we manufacture goods? Well, here's how. Once upon a time, in the days before the invention of this thing called the internet and the World Wide Web, if I'd written a book or a novel and I wanted to get it published, then my only recourse was to go to one of the very small handful of very big publishing houses, places with these intimidating names like Brace and Harcourt or Simon and Schuster, and I'd throw myself at their mercy. Now, I might have thought this to be the best book or novel yet written, but if the publishing house just threw up all over my manuscript, that was it. I was done. My book was never going to get published. And then along came this invention called the internet, and almost overnight, it transformed the publishing industry forever. Now, who needed the publishing house? Who cares if they think my novel was good or not? All that matters was I thought it was good, and I used the internet to publish it myself. As everyone today knows, the internet has practically put the printing industry out of business. The majority of newspapers, quote-unquote, today aren't printed on paper at all. They're electronic. So now let's talk manufacturing. If I'm an inventor or an entrepreneur with what I think is a really good idea for a new product that I want to take to market, I have to go to an established manufacturing facility that has all the mills and the CNC routers and the other expensive capital equipment and throw myself at the mercy of the owner or the plant manager. And if they throw up all over my new product, that's it again. I'm done. My new invention is never going to be manufactured. And then along came this invention called the 3D printer. For now, to start, because of the cost, they'll be found and used mostly in the fab labs only. But eventually, as the price continues to decrease, they're going to start to turn up in small shops all around the country. 3D printers are going to forever change the way we do manufacturing. Any entrepreneur or small business person will have the ability to manufacture right in their own workshop.
So, Don, help us and our listeners understand how fab labs and the new tools they contain can help to transform the economy here in the North Woods.
Well, in America right now, at least, Ken, here's the thing that almost no one has recognized or realized yet. It's only been in the last 2 years, less actually, that the cost of 3D printers has dramatically dropped to where individual consumers could almost afford one. We're talking in the $1,500 range. But most people have never even heard of a 3D printer or a fab lab. That means we're still early on in just the educational phase. And if that's the case, then the early adoption phase for using these tools and technology, that's a year or two off, maybe even more. So what that means is that while the rest of the country is still only reading about fab labs and 3D printing, any region or state that's smart enough, observant enough, and motivated enough to jump all over them right now is going to have a strategic and tactical first mover advantage of such enormous proportions that the implications for the local economy are staggering. How did Silicon Valley become Silicon Valley? It's because a handful of first mover companies with the vision for the PC industry chose a place to locate. While everybody else was still arguing over who would ever want a personal computer in their homes, and we saw how that turned out, by the way, these companies in Silicon Valley were already doing it, and the rest is history. So anyone who thinks that northern Wisconsin can't be part of a new economic enterprise zone that's based on broadband and the new tools that are coming out of the Fab Lab, they seriously underestimate the spirit and the can-do attitude of people all over the northern third of the state. Now, here's the missing piece that you need to know. There's only about 50 MIT-chartered fab labs in the entire United States. No state has more than six, and here in Wisconsin, we've got just four. There's two in the Fox Valley Technical College System, there's one over at the UW-Stout Discovery Center, and there's one in a grade 9-12 high school in Stoughton. Right now, there isn't a single K-12 fab lab in the state of Wisconsin, but that's about to change. In the same way that Three Lakes served as the early adopter and role model for putting the underlying broadband infrastructure in place, the Three Lakes School District will be the first K-12 in all of Wisconsin with a fab lab. Not Madison, not Racine, not Milwaukee, but Three Lakes. And that lab is scheduled to open this August in time for school.
So, Don, explain how having a fab lab at the Three Lakes School System is the start of transforming northern Wisconsin into a new economic enterprise zone based on technology.
Well, it's the first step, Ken. But before we talk about that, let me take a step back. What we're talking about here is adding another leg to the existing economic stool that's here in the North Woods. The kind of fab lab and 3D printing and new additive fabrication manufacturing businesses we're planning to introduce don't eliminate or in any way compete with the other legs of our existing economic stool. We still have our tourism, we'll still have our agriculture and our cultural arts, we'll still have our forest and wood products, and we'll still have our traditional manufacturers. But on top of that, we'll have a new industry sector that's based on broadband as the enabling technology which fuels this new manufacturing process. So what role does the Fab Lab play in the school environment as the first step in this transformation? It's simple, but it's extraordinarily powerful. In the K-12 Fab Lab, we're literally creating the workers of tomorrow. We're training them right here in the North Woods. And when they graduate from high school, we'll have jobs for them right here in the North Woods. Over the next 3 to 4 years, while we run the first group of these high school students through the Fab Lab STEM curriculum, those of us in local economic development will be out there on the streets talking to industry. We're going to ask our local manufacturers, what kind of worker do you need in the next 4 years? What skills should we be teaching them in the Fab Lab? Won't you please be on our advisory panel that helps us create the course curriculum that allows us to teach up and train exactly the workers of the future you'll need? For a long time now, a huge liability for the North Woods is that many of our young people graduate from high school and they leave us forever, either going off to a 2 or a 4-year college or seeking gainful employment where the jobs are. but by giving them the skills of tomorrow in the fab lab that they'll need, and then having those jobs of tomorrow ready and waiting for them right here in the Northwoods when they graduate. Now that's how we're going to start transforming northern Wisconsin into a new economic enterprise zone that's based on technology. All of the studies coming out of the Department of Public Instruction and the technical college system tell us that for the next 20 years or more, about 70% of what we used to call quote-unquote the middle-class manufacturing jobs will require more than a high school diploma, but less than a four-year degree at a college or university. Now, think about the implications of that. It's a game changer in terms of mindset, and it's exactly the opportunity any region that's putting in fab labs needs to be able to connect those dots between the right education and the right job upon graduation.
To further explore just how students in the K-12 environment are going to be exposed to the Fab Lab and use it in the coming years, I had a chance to talk with Dr. George Carling, the superintendent of schools for the Three Lakes School District. Dr. Carling, I think we'll start off, I guess, at the top, and let's do a little explaining as to, for someone who might have no background in this at all, what is a Fab Lab?
Well, a fab lab is a lab that contains several pieces of high-tech equipment that typically have not been found in schools. You may have seen one or two in a district, but we have not seen a lab where you brought together all of the high-tech equipment that you would need to get into the manufacturing business and be on the cutting edge. So, for example, we are talking about a CNC mill. For milling work, we're talking about a plasma cutter dealing with metals. We're talking about a microscribe, a 3D microscribe that goes hand in hand with a 3D printer. And we're talking about a laser engraver and a vinyl cutter. Those are the main pieces of equipment that we'll be working with in the Fab Lab and that our students will master as far as picking up skills that can take them right into the workforce.
Talk a bit about, you were just describing before we started about students and the need for this.
Well, this is very timely, although we've been looking for something like this for quite some time because we have an underserved population. Typically, we look at our top 20% of our students and they are college bound. And the bottom 20% have special needs. So we've been serving those two populations and doing very well. We have not been able to meet the needs of our underserved population, so to speak, which is the 60% of our students in the middle. And these students are gifted students, and they often end up going to college and not enjoying what they're doing and coming back and being a non-traditional student to get their vocational training sort of after the fact. What we need to do is get these things in their hands in the early stages of their high school experience so that they can experience these special skills that are needed to get into business and industry for the high-paying jobs. And so what we're looking at doing in Three Lakes with the Fab Lab is meeting the needs of our underserved population because these students are gifted, and they're just gifted in something other than what would require a four-year college degree. And when you look at the labor statistics, only 20% of the jobs in the next 10 years are going to require a four-year college degree. But 100% of the jobs are going to require training beyond high school. And we're looking at getting at that training while they're still in high school to pique their interest, to help them develop their career plans and their aspirations so that they can get into business and industry and provide that highly skilled workforce that is so important to our economic development.
And many of the schools aren't providing this type of curriculum at the moment, correct, for that group?
I believe we are the only one that is looking at channeling this program K-12. And I think there might be one other one in Wisconsin that does a 9-12 program, but we believe that it's too late if you start in the high school grades. You have to get into the elementary, 5th and 6th grade, and give them some information on this, get them interested. And then in junior high, the 7th and 8th grade students, we're going to have coursework for them that we call block coursework to give them exposure actually to the machines and how they work and help them to, you know, master their career plan, get it prepared so they can follow through in high school and garner these skills that are going to take them into the workforce. It also has demonstrated to us in similar type of programming that we have done that our students are ready to have a complete career map by the time they finish eighth grade. They know where they're going. They know what type of training they need. And what that does is it engages our students. So you've heard about students marking time in high school, just trying to finish their junior and senior years so they can go out and get a job somewhere. Well, this channels them into something that they're very interested in, and it helps them with their career path so that they know where they're going before they finish high school and they've completed the prerequisites in order to get there.
Talk about the STEM curriculum. STEM is an acronym, of course, but what is that about?
Well, STEM came about a few years back, and it's based on the need for a highly skilled workforce. And so STEM stands for, you know, technology, engineering, and math, science, technology, engineering, and math. And no sooner do we get used to that acronym, and they're already moving toward another one, and they're calling it STEAM, science, technology, engineering, art, and math, because we are looking for creativity in these programs, our future inventors. You know, we work with MIT with our Fab Lab, and we're in partnership with them. And they actually have 3D printers that have the ability to print food, and they have the ability to print packaging, but they don't have the ability to print food in a package yet. And MIT says that some of the students that we are working with are going to come up with the answers that they're looking for to do things like that, because they are creative. And that's why we look at the arts. We look at people with that creativity, and we try and deliver this and teach it across the curriculum so that we get at those students that are going to be the ones that are going to chart the course for our future with things we haven't even heard about yet.
And I think for someone who may not have heard of a Fab Lab, this is a revolutionary concept, isn't it, in terms of development of business and this type of thing, correct?
Absolutely. We're looking at it as being great for our entire region up in the Northwoods, because we already have spoken with employers that have said, you know, we're going to need additional training. We're moving into that area, and this Fab Lab will be perfect for us to utilize for training our employees and giving them additional training. They're looking for a set of basic skills, if you will, to transition from school into the workforce, but things are changing so rapidly. Retraining is needed, and the technology is moving forward so rapidly that we're never going to get away from the educational part of our manufacturing process. In fact, it continues to increase year after year. So they look at this as being fantastic for the northern region and great for our economic development and bringing employers to our area, because this is going to be a big plus for them to have something like this in the Northwoods. It's also going to be a big plus because we are regional for students in other districts. The Fab Labs, it's an expensive proposition, not only from the standpoint of dollars, but from the standpoint of your human resources. So we will be available to other students in other schools and even at the college to bring them in to utilize the Fab Lab and to have that experience.
How did you learn about the Fab Lab?
Well, I had heard something about it, but I really wasn't well educated regarding what the program was about until the issue was raised by Don Sidlowski, who you know is heading up Grow North Regional Economic Development at this time. And Don brought it to one of my board members, who was a businessman actually in December, and asked if the school might be interested in this. And he put me together with Don. We had a meeting. We talked about it, and we said, absolutely, this is something we've been waiting for, and it is a go. So I guess we can give Don the credit for bringing this up to us in December. And we've been working very, very quickly to establish our Fab Lab, which we believe will be fully operational by the beginning of August this year.
So it could be very, very quick in terms of getting this program up and running. And what is the Fab Lab STEM fit? How does that fit together?
Well, the Fab Lab, like I said, with the STEM, it is science, technology, it's the engineering part, it's the art, and it's the mathematics. So it cuts across our curriculum, and it requires a lot of changes to our curriculum and how we're teaching and what we're teaching. And that's a big part of the Fab Lab that we are making our adjustments for right now. We are doing some work in partnership with people at UW-Stout, because they're working on curriculum writing there. Our people have been working on the curriculum. We're working out also with the people in Matabidi over in Minnesota, because they have had a Fab Lab for a couple years over there. So our people, I am actually sending people on my staff over there for training in June to go through a 2 or 3 week training session on operating the equipment and the curriculum that they utilize over there. And so we're going to bring that back, and then we're going to continue to modify and expand upon that. And it certainly is a major effort for us, but it's something that we believe is going to pay huge dividends down the road for not only people in the Three Lakes community, but people in the whole northern region, and as well as our manufacturers and our employers.
I want to expand a little bit. It's going to change the approach, I imagine, for many of the teachers and educators within the district, correct?
Well, absolutely. You know, we're looking at continuously being on the move, and I have to say I'm very proud of my staff because they get very excited about new things, and they do follow through. You know, in talking with Don, he was thinking about a lot of other districts are talking about looking at this. They're talking about a year and a half to implement or get it operational. We heard about it in December. I heard about it from a board member. We met in January, toward the end of January, and you know, it's April now, and we know we're going to be fully operational in August. So we move quite quickly, and that's a credit to my staff. They're excited about it, we will continue to do that as we have with other programs. But I think the Fab Lab is something that is very critical, and it's definitely here to stay.
Mm-hmm. What the Three Lakes Fab Lab is kind of unique among K through 12. So talk about that.
Well, it's unique among K through 12 because we've done something in Three Lakes that I think is just starting to catch on in other districts around the region. In fact, around the country, and we changed our mindset several years ago, and this is about 8 or 9 years ago, where we said we're no longer going to survive as a school district if we're only there to deliver a curriculum to our students. And we have to shift gears because, you know, years ago you had a captive audience. Well, with the onset of open enrollment and people being able to pick and choose, you have to be able to market something to parents and students. And we decided in Three Lakes that we are going to market success. In other words, our job is to ensure the success of our students and meet their needs. So what we did was we changed our mode of operation from the standpoint of what was traditionally, I think, the model in all of our school districts was more of a punitive model. You know, if you fail to do this, you will fail the class, you will get an F or whatever. And we changed it from, no, we will work with you until you succeed. You know, you may get a poor grade the first time around, but we'll retake it, we'll redo it until you succeed. And our students responded very well to that, Ken, and they took ownership in their education, so they are driving their own education because they understand now that it's not our experience, it's their experience, and we are there for them. The results have been phenomenal. If you look back at our 10-year ACT composite scores, it happened, I believe, around 2008, where we saw, might have been 2009, where we saw a jump of one full point in our ACT composite from 21.5 to 22.5. And it hasn't dropped. It's continued to increase since that time. So naturally, we asked ourselves the question, what happened that was significant in this year 2009, where those test scores climbed by a full point? And by the way, we are a leader in our region in the ACT. But the answer was clear when we looked back at what had happened in the district. And in that year when those test scores climbed, that was the first year that students in grades 7 through 12, in other words, it was that first class that had experienced what we called our cultural change from grade 7 right on through to their junior year when they took the ACT. So we know that that's a major accomplishment for us, and the results were significant. But the other part of this is having the ability, when you tie this in with the Fab Lab and what's happening with our curriculum, having the ability to be able to deliver that hands-on experience for these students, because these students, they thrive in an environment where their experiences, rather than just theoretical, it's hands-on. And in talking to engineers out there in the field from business and industry, they said there's a major gap between theory and practice. And that is what is so important about the Fab Lab. It is going to bridge that gap between the manufacturing theory and the manufacturing practice and what actually happens on the job, because the kids are going to have, our students will have a hands-on experience on all these pieces of equipment actually operate before they get into the manufacturing setting.
And, you know, one of the critical things that I think in looking at this is that everyone thinks about the old shop, you know, every school had a shop class or something along that line. But this is something of a step far beyond that, isn't it?
Well, it's if you will, it's a mechanized and computerized shop setting, where you're no longer cutting with a torch, for example, by hand. There are certainly are applications when that is necessary. But when you talk about programming your plasma cutter or programming your CNC mill with a computer. You know, I was in our fab lab area just yesterday, and I was looking at some things that came off the 3D printer, where you are able to scan something in 3D and print a wrench, if you will. So we're talking, when you talk, look at the tool and die industry, you know, to print a wrench is something to me that's incredible. I'm talking about printing one with a printer that works.
So in other words, you can take the wrench and use it on a device.
Yes, you can scan it. You can take a wrench that you have in your shop and you can scan it and you can run that in through the computer, send it out to the 3D printer, and you will print a duplicate. It's fascinating. I toured an aircraft plant up in Duluth, Minnesota a couple years ago, Cirrus Aviation, and they had a huge CNC mill operation up there where they actually cut out their firewalls for their airplanes. And it's fascinating. It was in about a 12 by 12 enclosure, but you could actually watch through the glass and see someone on the outside programming this with a computer. A huge block of aluminum goes in there, and you can watch as this piece of equipment actually cuts out firewalls exactly the way they were needed, with holes for the controls and holes for the wiring that goes through. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about high tech and the change from what we experienced in the past with industrial education to what we're doing now that's actually happening in our manufacturing plants.
I saw a YouTube video from the Motto Mirai group, and a student, 15, 16 years old, was able to design a box, a workable box, using a computer and a printer. And when it was done, he put the box together. So there's an impact on the packaging industry, for instance. More than that, I think people at home can do this. This is not where you have to have an industrial plant. If you had one of these units at home, you could do it at home.
Absolutely. Part of our partnership with MIT, you know, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, they're on the cutting edge of this. And part of our partnership with them is that our fab lab will be open, I believe it is, two nights a week for people in the community, and not only our community and surrounding communities, to come in and try it out. We have several retired engineers in the Three Lakes community, and I'm hearing through people that they're very excited about this and having the opportunity to come in. So not only is it something that's going to bring us some well-trained students for the labor force and bring in some economic development to our region, but it's also something that cuts across our entire population. It's not only for the students. It's for people that may be looking to change their employment, maybe looking for some additional skills, and even our retirees who have been in business and industry are saying, this is going to be very interesting to see how these operate and be able to come in and actually have the hands-on experience ourselves. So everybody seems to be very excited about the program and what's happening.
And for students, they now come into the school experience with an opportunity to grab a career, as you might say, right before they get their high school diploma.
Absolutely. And that really is how it should be. These students are ready. They're ready to move on and move into the workforce by the time they graduate. So it's our job to get them the training that they need, you know, especially for their junior and senior year, for these students that are not going to be college bound, typically. And that's not to say that they are not going to go on. I have every confidence that there will be students that will move into the engineering realm and go much higher up when they complete this program. But this gives them the ground-level, hands-on experience that they need. It was best said to me a couple years ago when I was talking to a student who had been in the Nicolet College Automotive Program for a year, and I said, well, what are your plans for the future? Because we're always interested in their career aspirations. And this student sort of hit the nail on the head when he said, well, I plan on being an engineer. I said, well, how are you going to do that? He said, well, first, I'm going to go to Nicolet College for one more year to finish the automotive program, and I want to be an automotive engineer, but I want to finish the automotive program there because I think if you're going to be a good engineer, you better know what it's like to work on these vehicles, and you better have an understanding of what it's like to be the mechanic that's going to be repairing the vehicles. And he said, when I do that, I will work on vehicles for a few years, then I'm going to move on and go to Michigan Tech and become an engineer. And I thought that he hit the nail right on the head. That's what I call closing the gap between theory and practice, you know. And I think that's exactly what this Fab Lab is going to do for our students as well. So they will be ready to move into business and industry, but also ready to move on into higher education if they desire to do that.
And I guess I'd like to return a moment to that this is going to be the first of its type in Wisconsin at this level, correct?
That's correct. And when you talk about this level, here again, I don't think that you can engage students in something like a fab lab and begin in their ninth grade year in high school. And more, I think you have to look at moving down into the grades. So we are looking at giving the students information when they are still in elementary school, giving them a hands-on experience in what we would call an exploratory class or classes in junior high so that they know what it's like and have that experience, and then they can make that decision if this is something that they're very interested in, that they can make that move and be moving into the program in their ninth grade year. So I think you're doing a disservice to your students if it happens from the ninth grade up. It has to begin in elementary school.
And a couple of the tech colleges have these labs, but as far as K-12, Three Lakes will be first, right?
We'll be the first K-12 to have one that operates through all our grade levels. And we were a little surprised. We're looking for post-secondary institutions that have programming or certificated programming in place at this time, and we have not been able to find that. So in Three Lakes, we're on the cutting edge. We are going to be basically putting together our own programming and certificated programming, hopefully with the assistance of Department of Workforce Development, so that we can partner with employees and hopefully acquire some grant money that's out there to help defray our costs in the program.
And you're still looking, as I take it, you're still looking for business community support, correct?
Absolutely. Don has done a fantastic job, you know, with Grow North, and he is tying together the business end of it for us. We're in contact on a daily basis, and we're going to be meeting with these businesses who are excited about the program and what's happening, and we will be partnering with them and working on the grant. We have to have a business sponsor because technically the business is writing the grant. Although we are doing the legwork, we have to have a business that's engaged with us, at least one, but we're going to probably have more than that. I expect three or four businesses, even locally here, to be partnered with us in this endeavor. And as we always look at a program like this, we expect it to be something that's going to continue, and it's going to continue to grow. And I believe it's going to grow throughout our entire region. You know, we're the first K-12 to have this up here in the Northwoods, and I think it's going to spread to the other districts. I'm hearing about, you know, Rice Lake and Superior, and they're working on it, but they plan to be operational a year from this summer. So we're going to be basically the leaders in this effort, and we're, it's new ground for everybody, but we're going to be the ones breaking trail.
How would you measure success in the program? I know it's, you know, we're still looking far into the future, but this isn't necessarily a linear thing where you can add one and one and equal two. Isn't it more of a how do you measure success with it?
You know what we did, and I guess I'll go back to our cultural change. When we did that, we took a look at what was happening with the whole student. Not just their engagement in one area or another, but what's happening with them, with their education experience. So, how do they feel about their education? Are they happy about it? You know, are they busy? Are they engaged? Are they working with staff after school, between classes in their study halls? And of course, we look at grades and how they're coming along with their grades. And another good indicator is the coursework that they're taking. When we changed what we were doing in Three Lakes regarding our cultural change, and we engaged students and we had this career plan in place for them, by the time they finished eighth grade, we noticed that they were taking courses that they didn't take before. You know, they were taking more courses in accounting, and they were taking more math courses, more science courses. So you measure by several different things, not only the test scores and looking at things of that nature, but you look at the whole student, and that's what we're hoping to do. And I think we're going to see this, you know, with the Fab Lab. You can, you know, they start talking about where they're going in the future and how they're preparing. And another thing that we did with our students when we did the career map with them is we required them to go out and do their own research on what they wanted to do and report back. Of course, there are all kinds of programs that you can get onto a computer with and punch in what your aptitude is and answer all these questions and do these things. But we actually had them do research and report back to the class and do a written report, because it required them to think more about what they wanted to do rather than having the computer do their thinking for them. And we found that that had a very interesting effect on our students as far as student engagement and getting them interested in what was actually really happening rather than just pushing a few buttons and not really thinking about it. And so our students could tell you things that, you know, many of our staff members weren't even aware of. You know, like, for example, UW Eau Claire looks at a cutoff on the ACT of 21.5, you know, or things of that nature. And these students knew that when they were in eighth grade. So it's not something that they found out when they were a junior and they took the ACT. You know, oops, I'm not going to be able to go because I don't make the cutoff on the ACT score. You know, they knew it long ahead of time. So I think that's very important. And those are things that we look for in our students. But also, you know, you have to have the right personality and the right attitude about being in a workforce. And these are things that the manufacturers and the employers, they look at. You know, a big part is the attitude of the students. I mean, years back, we had employers come to us and said, our main goal is getting someone that's going to show up for work every day, you know. We're talking about attendance here. How's their school attendance? What are they doing? You know, because that's number one, you have to have them there. You're not going to get too much productivity. So they talked to us about things like that. They said, we can always retrain because things change so rapidly, but we want people with these employability skills and the dedication to their employer. So we look at those things as well and actually have training programs that we work with on our students from that standpoint. Safety is another thing, you know. I think there is a safety certificate out there with workforce development, a general safety certificate that the employers like these students to have. So it's a total package, and you look at when we determine how well we're doing, we look at certainly our workforce development looks at how many students are you going to place in the workforce. You know, that's sort of an easy one, but we go a little deeper to that and say, are we doing the things that are necessary for these students to be placed in the workforce?
Mm. One final question. You seem like you're pretty pumped. It seems like this has caught your attention. Talk to me about what your thoughts are.
Well, you know, I've been a superintendent for 27 years, and that's a pretty long time. And some of my colleagues have talked to me about this, and they said, you seem to be getting more excited the longer you go rather than looking at retirement and slowing down. And I have to tell you, Ken, not only with myself but with my administrative team, my Board of Education, our staff, and our students, we are very excited about what's happening in Three Lakes, you know, with our cultural change, with things that we've done with career awareness and readiness, with student engagement. And quite frankly, it's very enjoyable to see the fruits of your labor, so to speak. You know, when we see that ACT composite jump a full point and stay up there, that's very rewarding. When we see our students engaged and taking coursework, and we're having course overloads in difficult areas that we never had overload in before, it's rewarding. And most of all, it's rewarding to have the students engaged to the point where they are grabbing a hold of their education. They are engaged in their education, and they're looking for more. And it makes it very enjoyable to go to work every day in that type of an environment. And I am excited. I'm excited about what's going to happen with the Fab Lab and how we are, you know, I'm not saying it's not a lot of work because we're going full time and full steam ahead, so to speak, with the latest acronym. But when things are working well and you're making a lot of progress, and it's very exciting and it's very rewarding. This is what it's all about for us in Three Lakes.
Next, I spoke with Tim Brown, the UW Extension Community Natural Resource and Economic Development Agent for Oneida County, about the impact of broadband and economic development in the region. The Fab Lab has come to the forefront here in Three Lakes. And from the perspective of the University of Wisconsin Extension Business Development, what would a Fab Lab mean for this region economically?
A Fab Lab would do a lot of things, Ken. First of all, it would help prepare the workforce of the future here in the Northwoods. We know that an awful lot of the jobs that are being created in Wisconsin today and that will be created in the decades to come will require more than a high school education, but not quite as much as a lot of four-year educations give. These will be new kinds of jobs in production, in design, and they require specialized training using computers, using 3D printing, using laser engraving, laser cutting, and a Fab Lab would allow kids to learn how to do that while they're still in high school. So it would the Fab Lab would help create a local workforce to staff a lot of our local manufacturers who are doing metalwork, who are doing production, and who like to hire local people, who like to be able to keep their kids in the area, who like to provide opportunities right here. And the Fab Lab allows us to train people to do that. But beyond that, the Fab Lab also provides opportunities for entrepreneurship. If you're someone living in the North Woods and you have an idea for some interesting new gadget or product, you don't have to go find a huge manufacturing facility and persuade them to loan you their equipment for you to try out your ideas. You can go into the Fab Lab after hours, which is what it's designed to do. The Fab Lab is open to the community to go in and use the equipment, use the computers, the printers, the engravers to make whatever it is they can imagine. So we see the Fab Lab as really presenting an opportunity to grow entrepreneurship.
I guess what a lot of people, maybe if they can't envision it or haven't seen what it can do, it literally, if I'm correct in this, it literally would allow almost every person who could buy one of these systems to create products within their own home, correct?
Absolutely, Ken. I mean, I'm sure we're reaching a point in our world where if you need a new toothbrush, you're not going to have to drive to the drugstore to pick up a toothbrush. You'll be able to download the file from the internet and then push a button on your 3D printer and it'll create a toothbrush for you out of plastic there. So the way manufacturing is going to happen is going to change completely. The way shipping and supply chains work is going to change completely because you'll be able to make that product in your own home without having to go out and without that product having to travel from China all the way around the world to get to your doorstep.
And as a result, you will be literally able to produce almost everything that you need within your own home if you've got the funds to do it, I'm assuming.
That's what it's looking like. The future is rapidly approaching, and it's going to look far different than we ever imagined, I think.
Well, you know, in business development, I think the current model is you need a big building and you need manufacturing machines and you need all, you know, the standard factory type model. But maybe in the future that will be far less of an influence than it is now. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. Yeah. Manufacturing is just shifting completely. It's going from big to small. We'll be able to customize things much more easily. You'll be able to design the exact toothbrush or the exact toy for your kid that you have in mind and print it out if you have the equipment, which is getting rapidly cheaper and easier to use.
I think it's probably difficult for someone to grab onto the idea that you can make a toothbrush. For instance, you know, people think, well, you need plastic and you need this and that, but this machine that you will learn how to use will be able to do that. And you could boxes, I think almost any type of business that you can come up with will have that ability, correct?
Absolutely. If you can imagine it, you can make it now. And capabilities are not perfect yet, but they're getting better and cheaper every year. So where we are today is nothing compared to where we'll be 3, 4, or 5 years from now.
How does that change maybe how you will be looking at business development from, say, an extension perspective?
Well, it makes broadband a heck of a lot more important because supply chains may be disappearing. You know, you may be able to make the product in your own house, but you'll need the internet connection in order to download designs, in order to collaborate with other people who are working on similar designs. And we need a very wide internet pipeline in order for a lot of people to be able to be doing all of those activities at the same time. So we may not need highways quite as much. There may not be quite as many trucks on the road, but there's going to be a lot more data flowing through the internet. So it really increases the urgency of the broadband discussion because we won't be able to do any of this if we don't have the internet connections. So we at Extension, I imagine, will be talking quite a bit more about the necessity of broadband because none of this stuff that's coming in the future will be possible without very fast internet. You know, I don't know exactly what manufacturing will look like. I don't know exactly what entrepreneurship will look like 10, 15, 20 years from now. But I do know that it's going to be highly reliant on the internet. And you can quote me on that in 20 years if I'm still here.
Next, Don Sedlowski shared some closing thoughts with me about the new initiative. So Don, sum it all up. Where is broadband and economic development taking us in the North Woods?
Like any other new initiative that one day is going to create jobs and spur the growth of new business models, the work always begins down in the trenches. You start by first building the foundation and putting the underlying infrastructure in place. In this case, that was the broadband network. The thing is, when you're down there in the mud, below the ground level, pouring the footings for that foundation, no one can see what you're doing. But then one day, there you are, standing on top of the foundation, and you're starting to erect the walls, and you put on the roof trusses, and all of a sudden, people begin to take notice. Well, all of that hard work and time that we invested into making places like Three Lakes and Minocqua and Rhinelander high-speed internet ready, and despite all the naysayers who said we were wasting our time, that's about to pay huge dividends for the local economy. Those who leveled the criticism simply didn't have the vision that in the 21st century, technology is the great equalizer. When properly deployed and then used in these entirely new industries, broadband levels the playing field. None of us here in the Northwoods who are working on these initiatives want to see a state that consists of two halves, one with the blessings of a secure future and the other left behind because we couldn't marshal the effort or the resources to move it forward. The Fab Lab in the Three Lakes K-12 is the first of its kind in the state, but it won't be the last one here in the North Woods. Our goal is to have one lab in each of the eight counties in the Grow North region within the next 2 to 3 years. That will give Wisconsin more Fab Labs than any other state in the country, but more importantly, it shines a spotlight right here on the North Woods. The business and the finance community will take notice, and that will be the start of the transformation of the economy of northern Wisconsin as we take the existing economic stool and add this new leg, one that's based on broadband, as the enabling technology for any number of economic development initiatives going forward.
Well, that concludes our report for today. You've been listening to a WXPR special program on broadband and economic development in the North Woods. Thank you, Don Sadlowski. This is WXPR News Director Ken Kroll.